Oh my God, it's a run-in! All right, running in here, SummerSlam edition. Once again, welcome back, Murder Gymnastics Wrestling Podcast. My name is Mr. Meanie, also known... Wait a second. My name is Carl, also known as Mr. Meanie. Almost tricked myself there. I have the SummerSlam craziness. And over there is my buddy. Buddy, what's your name? Ah, yes, Paul.
Devil Bear something or other. I don't know.
Who knows anymore? Who knows?
I don't know what my gimmick is. I blame Vince.
You're the man on the screen.
That's right.
I blame Vince for everything. Okay, so.
Tall guy.
Exactly. All right, so we made it back. Time for a run-in. We talked about SummerSlam in our last episode. Now it's time to actually break it down. You actually watched a WWE premium live event. I'm very excited.
Yes.
So it doesn't first just have one... me blathering around. We can both blather around.
Exactly. It's my first one in forever. And I've got so many fond memories of times gone by where getting together with a bunch of people and just watching SummerSlam or WrestleMania or, you know, the bigger shows and just having fun. So I honestly can't even tell you what the last SummerSlam I watched was, so it's been that long.
Excellent. Yeah, because we started watching when we first got together, my wife and I, we didn't have cable and we didn't have any way to watch anything. So if we saw a wrestling event, it was just by fluke. But the last like 5 years, 6 years, we've just been once you subscribe to the network, we just have slowly become completely addicted, and I've somehow managed to get her completely addicted too, which is perfect. Mm-hmm. So it's like now we're watching Raw and SmackDown and every premium live event. So it's a beautiful thing. So I feel like an old pro when it comes to talking WWE premium PLEs, and acronyms are the worst.
Yes. That's okay. I still call them PPV pay-per-views. And I mean, they're not technically a pay-per-view.
Nope.
With the WWE.
No, you can't pay to view it. If you're not watching, you're not watching. So if you don't subscribe, overall, I would give it a thumbs up. I enjoyed the event. I thought it was a well put together event with a really great crowd in Detroit. I thought Ford Field brought it, and they were freaking loud and popped when they should have. And actually it seemed like a very positive atmosphere. So yeah, overall, I thought it was a good show. What'd you think?
Yeah, I would say overall a good show. My first note was, because I mean, anybody that's listened to this podcast for any time knows that I'm used to more small scale wrestling shows. So man, the WWE sure knows how to put on an event, like just everything, right? Like, just don't even worry about the wrestling for right now, just a presentation. I was just fascinated by watching these blue lights that just make it feel like it is such this massive, massive event. And just the way they organize the runway from, you know, from Gorilla into the ring is interesting, and the way they have that lit up. And you're right, like the crowd was into it. So just the atmosphere, the presentation was totally on point. I was like, wow, I actually feel like I've kind of been missing out a little bit.
Something that's awesome that they do every time is it's a different stadium setup every time. So the trip to the ring and where they have Gorilla and where they have the entrance and the stage and whatever is always totally different. So they change it up from show to show. It's never the same type of, like, sometimes it's a long windy trip to the ring. Sometimes it's just a dead straight wide that kind of narrows like a funnel. Like, it's really just based on the place, whether it's a baseball stadium or a soccer stadium or whatever they have to deal with. Plus they have to deal with hard cam side being like mostly empty on that one chunk. So they got to figure out a way to still make it look huge, but have that center, you know, runway coming down. And yeah, I thought the Ford Field one was very impressive. It definitely like guided the wrestlers down, looked very dramatic with the lights. And those blue lights you're talking about was so cool. I thought those were so cool.
Yeah. Well, and the runway from Gorilla into the ring reminded me, I mean, it's in Detroit, so it's, you know, Motor City.
Yeah.
It reminded me of a roadway, and I'm sure that was intentional to remind you of like a racetrack or a roadway from backstage into the ring. So yeah, that was on point. And yeah, WWE gets a lot of flack, rightly or wrongly, whatever, but man, they know how to put on a show.
Yeah, they package it up, and you definitely can't say it wasn't a spectacle that you watched. When it ends, you go, that was a thing I just watched. That was definitely, there was nothing dull about a WWE pay-per-view. So
no, they do not cut corners, that's for sure.
So you have to start with the good news, and that was that Kid Rock was only in the cold open digital vignette that was pre-recorded. So we didn't actually, because he came on the screen and we both were like, oh no, please, please no. And it was pretty, it was pretty minimal. So we didn't have to start chucking stuff at the TV. He was gone. He wasn't in the building. He wasn't the host. I was terrified he was going to be standing in the middle of the ring. I was going to be like, oh God, no, here we go. But thankfully, no, we can move on from that guy.
His appearance was as fleeting as his fame.
Thank God. So then it jumped right into a match that they really hyped up. I thought they almost overhyped, and they do, you know, they do this in AEW as well. They put stipulations and expectations on a match sometime, and they build it up. And then you think, God damn, how are you expecting these two people to just meet what you just said? Right. And all these expectations, because Ricochet, Logan Paul, it's been a good promo or good feud that they've been building here. But the whole basis of the feud is that I can do a bigger spot than you can. I'm going to be the showstopper. I'm going to have the move of the night. So boy, does that make it tough for them to like have. So I thought the match was good, but it felt like a match of just like one upping each other. I'm going to do the bigger move. And like, it's not their fault. That's literally what they set on the match. That was the expectation. And I thought they both, you know, Logan Paul for a celebrity, I think he's clearly the best celebrity wrestler they've ever had, because I don't think of him as a celebrity at all in there. I watch him and I'm just thinking he's a heel wrestler. I cheer against him. I know he's going to do the moves. He can take the bumps. He sells. I'm always impressed that he sells really well for just some guy, some famous celebrity. But so the match itself, I thought they did the best they could with a match that had these massive expectations for spots. It doesn't stand out as my favorite match, obviously, of the night, but it wasn't a terrible way to start it, because the crowd was hot. As soon as Logan Paul came out, Ford Field turned instantly. No one in that building was cheering for Logan Paul.
No. Well, and you're going to be my Sherpa through this, as far as like lending me what the backstory is. And sometimes there's stipulations that I was unaware of coming into this, because I wasn't aware of that stipulation. I've heard
it wasn't an official stipulation. It just, they've been one up in each other constantly saying they're going to be the big show. They're going to be, so that's why they had that match together. They knew they would be trying to one up each other.
That makes sense, because my major note of this, not really understanding the backstory, and that's on me. That's not on them, because if you've been building, it's like watching a movie and you come in for the last act and you're like, wow, come on. Right? Like, you can't complain that, you know, the story wasn't told when you're just there for the last of it. Anyways, that was my observation, just coming in cold without any background, was that there was not really a lot of flow. And you saying they're trying to one up each other, that's exactly what I felt like the whole time. Is like, okay, there's not really any flow or any of that it's just, it's just a little bit herky jerky. And it was fine. It was an entertaining match, but it's not going to win match of the night.
I think that's why they do it as the opener, because you're going to get some big spots. You're going to get some huge flying over the top, flying off the top, two guys just zipping around. It'll get people out of their seats, because that crowd, anytime anyone climbed up the rope, half the audience stood up, which I loved, because you don't always get that. And I think you should get that. If you're at the arena, you're there to see wrestling. Someone's climbing to the top rope, stand up. It's exciting. Mm-hmm. You're going to want to, you feel like you're closer to the action that way. And so doing that first, two guys that are doing these big moves, the crowd just kept standing up, cheering. It was just a great way to fuel everybody for what was to come. So I think they accomplished that goal. So
just like an opening act on a concert, they're just there to wind the crowd up, and they did a good job.
And even though I don't cheer for Logan Paul, I'm always there for a brass knuckles heel totally cheats then stuffs the weapon down his pants, always there for that. So I thought the finish was fantastic, with his poor girlfriend fiance, has to watch that, and she had the tear in her eye. I'm like, there you go, well done, there it is. So,
and has to announce, the winner of the match not being her fiance.
Exactly. So decent way to start. But then of course the lights go down, and that music hits and you know that Brock Lesnar is coming down and now things are getting serious. So he's been wrestling for 20 whatever fucking 5 years. I don't know what it is now, but you know, Brock Lesnar may not wrestle all the time. He may not be, he can't go as long as he used to be able to go, but I never question anything that Brock Lesnar does. When he comes out, he terrifies me. And then he does everything he's supposed to do. He leaves and I have bought everything he's done. Like I never once see him break character. He doesn't botch, because if he even comes close to botching something, he'll just punch you. He'll just do something. He'll kick you really hard, and or he'll be mad and, you know, take his glove off and hit you with a chair. Like he just always shows me exactly what he's supposed to be doing. I never question him for a second. And yeah, I thought he was the perfect guy to do what they obviously wanted to do, which was give Cody a stage to be like, all right, Cody Rhodes, here you go. Here's a giant crowd. And the guy that, you know, ended the Undertaker streak. They said that Brock Lesnar has beat 16 Hall of Famers. That's a nuts stat, like an insane stat. So this was like a passing of the torch sort of match. It definitely had that feel, because hard times. Cram that hard times into 16 minutes or whatever that was. Cody got just rocked in that match. Like, Jesus.
He survived this match.
No one can say he can't take a bump, eh? Jesus Christ.
Well, and this match was great. And it's one of those things of a great match isn't always defined the same way, right? Like some matches, it's about the movesets. It's about this match wasn't about the moves.
No.
Were there good moves, good spots in it for sure, but this match was about the story. This match was about storytelling. That's what you were supposed to be on board with, and I didn't have any context other than what you've told me as far as the whole hard times angle, and I was invested in this, and I'm like, how am I as invested in this match as I am just coming into this cold? And yeah, it was great spectacle, and him overcoming the, you know, insurmountable mountain.
And here's something awesome that if it is still a work, then they worked me. I don't, I'm taking this as real, that it was a shoot that I heard that Cody came out and said they had not discussed, because Brock doesn't traditionally meet much about what's going to happen. He's kind of like Andre the Giant in that way. You're going to wrestle him. You're going to talk about what's going to, but he's not going to like discuss like what's going to happen after or anything like that. It's going to feel natural in the ring. So when it ended and he took his gloves off and they're standing nose to nose, Cody thought he was going to hit him. He had no idea that any of that was coming, according to the story. And I'm accepting the story because, like, what else? What am I, some kind of conspiracy theorist? No, like, I have to accept what they showed me and what he said. So, yeah, he was like, when he shook the hand, he was still expecting him to pull him in and lift him up and drop him down. He was expecting something bad. He did not expect, I certainly did not expect to see Brock lift his arm, salute him to the crowd, and then walk out of the ring. I was like, my jaw was on the floor. I've never seen, no one's seen that before. So,
yeah, that was a huge moment. Absolutely. Because, well, we're all along for the same ride that Cody was, where you're like, well, is this legit? Probably not. You're just waiting for the sucker punch. So that.
And because they've set it up so well over the years that Brock just beats the shit out of people all the time in situations like that, where it should be that, it never is. And he always hits 12 F5s in a row and then goes home. It would fool everyone. There's no one that could say, oh yeah, I totally knew that was going to happen. Bullshit. Mm-hmm. There's no way you knew that was going to happen, because it really shouldn't have happened. That's like Brock Lesnar. He's the unstoppable beast, but it's also his job to put over the guy that is clearly, you know, going through hard times to climb the ladder, complete this story. You know, that was probably my match of the night, but it's tough to say. We'll get there. I'll figure that out at the end. I'll decide that once we've gone through each one, but I loved that match. I enjoyed the story so much.
Well, and I thought Brock did something. I haven't seen a lot of Brock Lesnar, so I can't really speak that much, but he was doing something, and this is why I was saying the match was more story, where he kept yelling at Cody, like, stay down, you know, like he was not wanting to punish him. He was going to if he had to, but he was just telling him, like, you're beaten, just stay down, which adds that whole extra layer to Cody overcoming. So I thought that was awesome. I thought that totally. Was brilliant. And I loved seeing that.
It was the epitome of what I'm always saying with like how I'm sick of the comparisons between AEW and WWE. They're two different products. It's like like comparing table tennis to regular tennis. Like one's not better than the other. They are two completely different things. And AEW is about the matches. They will put on, they want to have as many five-star Meltzer matches as they can. And so if you just want to sit down and watch a wrestling show and see some just ridiculously good matches, that's what you're going to see. The storytelling in AEW, I'll be honest, I don't think is that strong. It's okay, but some of their stories vanish. Some of the stories are fine. They usually have one core story that they have MJF and Adam Cole. That's kind of their most important story. They'll dangle a few others, but I find that WWE, it's all about story. And sometimes they'll even sacrifice a good match to make sure they're getting the narrative across. So I watch both for different reasons. And so when I'm watching SummerSlam, I want to see matches like that are telling me a narrative throughout the entire thing. I thought it was perfectly done.
Well, and at the end of the day, you want each brand, each promotion to have its own flavor. Otherwise, just watch one.
Exactly. Like,
I don't know. I like variety, whether it's music or movies or food. I don't like to eat the same things every day. So apply that to my wrestling. And yeah, I really did appreciate a little bit more story based in this. And I know you've said that in the past, but this was my first time actually witnessing that. So I really appreciated that.
Totally. So that match, left an impact. We moved into, the Battle Royal was something that had so much expectation on it for fans like us. You know, there was no one that I knew closely that watches wrestling that was watching this event that would have been satisfied with that Battle Royal not being won by LA Knight. So the whole time I was excited, but also really nervous because, and they did a good job of tricking me. At near the end, I was positive he wasn't going to win. Like I was positive. In fact, I had this bad feeling like that he would slip because they do those reckless fake outs in battle royals where they go over the top and just barely hang on. You could easily slip and let go and, oh no, well, you're out. That's, you weren't supposed to be, but you are. So,
but you are. Yeah.
So I was terrified that he was just going to slip and fall out. I kept expecting because Sheamus is Sheamus. He's won so many titles. He's just been a powerhouse for so long that he was just going to bro kick or whatever he does, his big smash kick, and LA Knight would go flying over the top and the crowd would go insane. Cause the crowd, like he was the last one out and the crowd went completely ballistic for him, just like they did at Money in the Bank. But I'm fine with the pacing that they're doing with his push. Mm-hmm. I just really want it to happen. And then we got that moment. And I was like, okay, it is happening. Because even though that match doesn't have any ramifications, there's nothing, it does. Like people are like, oh, that match doesn't mean anything. Bullshit. Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. Look at LA Knight's face when that ends. You could see the relief on his face that he finally didn't just get a reaction. He got a fucking victory at a pay-per-view that matters. So it doesn't matter that there's no belt or that match doesn't get you anything. It gets him a whole lot. It gets him a future, hopefully. So.
Well, and it keeps the momentum because I agree with you. Like, you don't want the push to be done too quick, but you need progress, right? Like, exactly. It has to be going somewhere, even if it's at a slower pace. And I think this was exactly that. Like, okay, there wasn't a stipulation like a title shot or anything on the line, but exactly. Like, if nothing, it's showing WWE the pop he gets when he wins. The crowd is into him and he's worth the push that he is getting.
Totally. Margot, actually, she had such a great point that because he ended up being in the Slim Jim commercial, he is the Slim Jim ambassador. That Slim Jim Battle Royal, it should have been the winner becomes the ambassador for Slim Jim. Why do they have that as a stipulation? Because he won anyway. They could have just said beforehand, they established, LA Knight, you're clearly the ambassador. You're going to win. But we don't know that. So that would have been a great, like, they could have been doing little vignettes on how they want to be the next sponsor for Slim Jim. Cause then it's all big commercial anyway. Who gives a shit? They're all selling pepperoni sticks. I think that would have been a fun stipulation, but we don't write this shit. So
we don't.
I don't have much else to say about the Battle Royal because it was a Battle Royal. It was all about just getting to the end and getting LA Knight the win, and we got that. Yep. So I'm happy.
Yep. 100%. Me too. That's the only note I have is LA Knight wins. Yay!
So the next match, I feel like I was the only person excited going into it. No one was excited about Shayna Baszler and Ronda Rousey because Ronda Rousey. I don't like Ronda Rousey either, but I was really looking forward to this match because I sort of sensed what was happening. I kind of had the feeling that Ronda was done in WWE and that this was kind of the another passing of the torch, just like Brock did, that she would be, I'm like, an MMA rules match sounds like they're going to have like their kind of fight and that somehow the baddest woman on the planet is going to tap out and basically Shayna Baszler will be the new badass in WWE. And it went exactly as I thought. And yeah, that wasn't a pretty match. That wasn't a wrestling match because they said it was an MMA rules match. That was an MMA match. It actually looked like an MMA fight. Lots of grappling, lots of chokehold, lots of low punches. They were actually doing, they were like they were punching each other. I was watching, but they weren't doing full punches, but they were just,
it wasn't full force.
They were doing their normal punch, punch, kick, kick that they always do. And I thought for what they set that to be, it was exactly what it needed to be. I enjoyed it. I'm glad Shayna got the win. Jesus Christ, her eyes fucked up. She was out on Monday and it is so puffy. You can barely see her eyeball. So like there was a real elbow somewhere in there that caught her. But yeah, that was not a pretty five-star wrestling match, but that's not what it was. Like they literally said it was going to not be that going in. People were bitching about it before. I'm sure they're bitching about it now, but I enjoyed it because that's what they said it was going to be. And it was exactly that. So,
yeah, I'm not invested in either of these people. Like I know who Ronda Rousey is, never seen her wrestle in WWE.
But now you won't.
Nope. And it was kind of boring because it was predetermined MMA, which I've seen lots of UFC and MMA in the past. And I'm like, yeah. I've seen this and it's fine. You're right. It delivered on what it was selling you for sure. But yeah, it was not my favorite match. I was glad it was over, and it didn't sound like the crowd was really into it either.
No, nobody was into it except for me.
I felt bad because Baszler was celebrating at the end and the crowd was so silent. And I'm like, I felt bad for her because it's clearly a big moment for her.
Yeah.
And she's not getting the adulation or any kind of pop to kind of help kind of cascade that victory for her. So I felt bad for her, but yeah.
It carried over into Raw pretty good. She got a pretty good reaction. And because her eye is so messed up, whenever a performer comes out, a wrestler, and they've got a visible injury from what they just did the night before, people always go, oh, it gets a bit of respect. You could hear the crowd like, they kind of gave the clap like, Jesus, you're out here right now? Wow. Well, and she got into a match. It was like, you're going to wrestle right now? I'm like, oh wow. Geez. So yeah, she's tough. She's a tough lady.
Wrestling's fake, Carl.
I know. What the hell? That makeup looks so good. The eye looked really, really fucked up.
She really sold the injured eye.
Anyway, that match, it is what it is. We moved straight into what was announced as being a banger, and you can't really go wrong when you have two big guys. You have Drew McIntyre, you have Gunther, you have Intercontinental title. They smacked each other around. They threw each other around. It was, again, that was as advertised. That's what I expected from the match. Red chests, red backs by the time it was over. I was actually impressed that Gunther, I think they're going to let him just break Honky Tonk's record because it looks like they want to really establish these titles, the importance of these titles, which you know I like. Mm-hmm. So, because I thought Drew McIntyre, there was rumors that he had been gone for a bit last couple months because he was really unhappy with the direction that his stories have been going. So when I heard that, I was like, are they just tricking me with that? Or does that sort of lead us to believe he's going to, you know, here you go, here's the title. But Triple H doesn't just hand people stuff. So that result made sense. I thought that match was, again, what I expected. Two big guys, they slapped each other around. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a good match. My only real note of this is Gunther should not come off the top rope because he looked awkward as hell coming off the top rope. I'm like, is he going to hurt himself?
I think that's why he does it, because he always does that move. He always goes off the top. Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah. It looks awkward as hell.
But yes, him and Drew shouldn't really be guys that big shouldn't be going off the top, which is, I think, why they do it. Kind of like the wow, I can't believe this is happening moment. So,
yeah.
But it's, those two guys should be on the ground just smacking the shit out of each other. I agree. Yeah. So yeah, decent match. It ended the way I thought it would, or the way it should. And yeah, I enjoyed. The next match, you know, when I heard that Seth Rollins was going to be going against Finn Balor, I got excited because two little guys that can really go at a pay-per-view means you're going to get exactly what you got. Like that was probably the match of the night. But again, I'm not going to jump to conclusions. We're not done reviewing yet, but that was the type of match that you need at a pay-per-view to just, it demonstrated there was story. Cause that's a really interesting story. I don't know if how well they set that up for a viewer like yourself that didn't know where they were coming from, but they had the story of 7 years ago, Finn Balor won that title. He was the first winner of the World Heavyweight Championship in WWE. And in that match separated his shoulder and Seth Rollins separated his shoulder. And so the next day he had to give up the title. Worst day of his life in real. I heard him interviewed, a shoot interview where he was like, that was the worst day of his life. He went into a horrible depression. And So here, 7 years later, Seth Rollins is now wearing that. They brought back that title. It's a brand new title. Seth's wearing it. And so Finn Balor has this grudge, the 7 year grudge, which is a real grudge, not really against him, but just against the universe and perfect for a story. To me, it was like the perfect story. Mm-hmm. And they also mix in there this whole Money in the Bank controversy within the Judgment Day. Cause you know, having not seen it yourself, they, you know, Judgment Day is this tight faction and they're like our favorite faction. We love them. But by having one of the members win that Money in the Bank, it's created this like a little bit of turmoil in there because, you know, Finn's trying to get this title from Seth, but Damian's like, yeah, you get the title, but you know, maybe I'll come right in afterwards and get the title. Like, he's always got that briefcase. There's a bit of a feud brewing within Judgment Day, which I really enjoyed. So that match had layer upon layer of story, which I really enjoyed. And yeah, I thought that match was top notch. I enjoyed everything about it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And yeah, I just love Seth Rollins coming in. And what is he announced as? Seth freaking Rollins, and just right? playing off the crowd. And that's one thing that I really noticed too, like you've mentioned it in the past, almost the football crowd vibe, right? Where
yeah.
the crowd likes to be involved. They want to be, you know, brought into the match. They want their cues where they can interact with what's going on. And yeah, that was awesome.
When they sing his song at the beginning, yes. It's just, it gives me chills. I get chills every single time. And he gets in the ring and the music shuts off and he closes his eyes and it just keeps going. And going. And I don't care if people get sick of it. I never get sick of it. My wife and I are both on the couch going, oh, we're both doing it too. Like, I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah, no, I love that. That was honestly one of the most memorable parts of the whole SummerSlam was his entrance and just him playing to the crowd, just working them like a maestro does an orchestra. It was brilliant. Yeah. I loved seeing that.
And storytelling on a face. When Seth was standing in the ring and the crowd is singing for him, his eyes are closed. If you looked over and you saw Finn Balor's face, he was selling his hatred so much. He had this like, because Finn Balor can do this like death stare where he's just like trying to burn you with his eyes. And he just stared at him the whole time. So the crowd's having such a good time. But if you look to the right, you're like, oh, that person's really upset. that's a mad person over there. So yeah. And then, of course, Judgment Day always has to come in and interfere. So we didn't have a Rhea Ripley match, which some people were mad about. But I'm sorry, her feud opponent got hurt like a week before SummerSlam. What are you supposed to do? So they're not going to just book some garbage match for her at SummerSlam. It's SummerSlam. They hyped this pay-per-view up as like the second best of the year, the biggest of the year. So they couldn't just put her in a garbage match. So she still was able to come out. She was still involved, you know, at ringside. So people still got to see her, and Dominic was there. So, I find so many comments, people just like being very unrealistic with their expectations on things. Like I know they want to see Rhea Ripley really bad, but just understand the actual situation, the actual thing that's going on.
Let things play out. You may have written something in your head and this isn't going according to it, but let things play out.
Yeah, if a person's hurt, they're hurt. So you'll see that match in a month or two, so just relax. So anyway, that match was great. I wasn't convinced that Seth was going to defend. I wasn't sure where they were going with it, so I had images of Damian cashing in on if Seth defended, of Finn winning and maybe Damian cash in. I wasn't sure where they're going with it. They had me all loop-de-loop, so ending with Finn getting the briefcase in the face was a good ending. There's definitely still animosity there. They had me on the edge of my seat and also superly confused. So yeah, the ending was good. The finish was good, and I enjoyed. So, yeah, that match, excellent. It led into the women's triple threat. Triple threats. Sometimes I worry about triple threats because to me, a triple threat should be like chaos. Three people just beating the shit out of each other. But oftentimes, one person's always knocked outside the ring unconscious so that two people can just have a wrestling match and then they just rotate. And I find that gets, and that happens in all promotions. I see it all over the place. That gets really boring when it's this person's turn to be thrown over the top rope. And now you two just have a wrestling match. And
yeah.
So, but this was actually three people. They were doing spots that involve three all the time. Moves where one person was in a submission hold and the other person does a move off the top rope. Like I actually thought it was a really, really good match. And I think it was the longest match of the night too, other than the main event. So yeah, the girls went out and they put it all on the line. They put it all in the ring. And I thought it was actually a really good match.
I found it a little sloppy and I agree with you. Like it was nice to see that they didn't have the one person getting isolated. So exactly. You just have some one-on-one action. It just seemed like a lot of spots seemed either hesitant or I don't know. There just didn't seem to be a lot of flow to it. And then one thing that I just absolutely hate where somebody gets hurt and they're medically being escorted out, and then they make this miraculous run into the ring. You know, she's apparently like shattered her knee, but she's going to run into the ring. And I'm like, well, if she's still wrestling, she would have been counted out. But yeah, I don't know. That really kind of drove me nuts, but it was an entertaining enough match. And it was a creative finish. Like I liked the way it finished. I was like,
that was a neat finish with her in the figure four. But then she does the pin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a neat finish. Because
that was neat.
It seemed, I was like, what is happening right now when it first happened? I'm like, I don't understand this.
Of course, what do we get after the win?
So we've talked about the triple threat. Yeah, it was a decent match. No. Then it became the awesomest match. Then I heard the dan, dan, dan of Io Sky. And I was like, oh, thank fuck, someone's cashing in tonight. So yeah, that made my night, obviously. I was so excited. And good news, the crowd popped like crazy. I was really hoping they would, because she's had some trouble the last few months getting people on her, you know, figuring what her gimmick is and getting on her side. And you know, her English is not great. So her promos, like I love her angry yelling Japanese promos, but that doesn't always flow with the American crowd. But yeah, it was great finish getting Io off the top, doing her move. The cash in was exciting. The crowd was on it. It was, yeah, I loved it. It was what I was hoping we would get out of the night. And now I'm hoping that we get a successful title reign and good story for her, because she's been busting her ass and she totally deserves it. So,
yeah, I thought that was a really, really fun moment, a very memorable moment, because I wasn't as big a fan of the match as you, but at least that had the payoff. Like as much as I didn't like,
totally,
you know, the person coming in on a broken leg and somehow getting the win, it led to the cash in and then led to a bigger moment. So I was okay with that.
Which is often why the ending needs to make sure is the ending is the best part of the match. Cause then even if it's a little weak getting there, what you'll remember is the finish. The finish, just nail that finish, make it amazing. Hulk Hogan's match has always ended. He's doing his posing and all that stuff. The leg drop happened and you're like, yeah, you don't remember that it actually was a really shitty match before that. You have no recollection of that at all. You just remember the big finish, right? So
yeah, you exactly. You remember that moment, that adrenaline rush.
Yeah. So that was, so in that one match, Bianca, she won the title in the longest match for that belt at a pay-per-view. And then she lost to Io Sky in what is on record as the shortest match for that belt at a pay-per-view, all within like 30 seconds. She has both records now. So obviously she's not going to be thrilled with that, but yeah, very exciting. It was very good. I enjoyed it a lot. EO has been, since NXT, I've been a fan of hers. So, and I, with Vince in charge, I was never convinced that we were going to see any of the Japanese wrestlers other than Asuka. Asuka is the only one that he seemed to allow like one at a time. You know, it's like Shinsuke Nakamura. I love this guy. He just disappears and only one Japanese wrestler at a time. It's like, come on, Vince, man. It's like, seriously, do you know how over New Japan is? Do you know how many people love that promotion? How many people love Japanese wrestling? Like, so it's clearly times are changing. And I would love to see now Asuka and her have a feud. Just like, because they had a feud back in New Japan, have one of like an old school, because they're strikers and high flyers, and it could be fantastic. So,
well, and introduce some of the fans who haven't really seen that style of wrestling, right? Like,
totally.
I think of some of the wrestlers, high flyers that we, you know, when we were growing up, we didn't really see a lot of that. And then suddenly you saw a few of those making their way, and it was enthralling to see this new brand of wrestling that, I mean, a lot of the world had seen, but because at that time we were just watching WWF/WWE,
yeah,
we weren't seeing that. So it's a good way of introducing that new layer to your brand.
Totally agree. Yeah, totally agree. And with Io having Bayley as kind of her second, like they're a faction, so Bayley gets to kind of, she comes out as almost like a manager at times and does a lot of the mic work now, which actually works really well. So she's kind of like the Paul Heyman kind of handler at times for Io, which really works if someone's English isn't quite strong enough for them to have like long narrative promos. She can just come in with some angry thoughts at the end or some slide comments, but let Bayley sort of guide the story for people. And I think they can make that really work. So we'll see what they do. So yeah, good match. And that, of course, took us to the main event. So this was something that, like, this story has been going for like 2 years, and they've been doing a masterful job of just somehow moving to the next step and the next step. And right when we're sure it's got to be over now, they somehow figure out a way to keep the story going. And so they set up something that, unfortunately, they didn't deliver on, but I'm not going to start with the negative, because I actually really enjoyed the match itself, because I think both Roman Reigns and Jey Uso are tremendously talented. Especially Jey right now is just, he's a face actor. He can, like, he's athletic off the top rope. The guy can do everything. It's spectacular to watch him. Roman Reigns is just kind of the solid rock that just never screws up, never makes a mistake, never drops character. So, and Paul Heyman just being out there is just a joy always. So the match itself, it was the longest match of the night. And I really enjoyed the match, like the what happened in the match. The tribal combat, they sort of blew that out the window. So that was a big disappointment for me, because they had hyped it up beforehand as this big thing. Tribal elders approved and all this stuff and rules and stipulations that all went out the window, and it was just a no DQ match with interference, like always. So I was very disappointed. I don't know how that happened. If that's Vince, if that's Triple H, I don't know what happened there, but it wasn't, they didn't give you what they said they were going to give you, which I find very odd. The interference was not supposed to be allowed. We had interference twice. So I just don't understand. It seemed like there's no way they forgot. So it was on purpose. I'm not sure what happened there, but everyone's complaining about it. Nobody's happy with the tribal combat aspect of that match, because it wasn't there. There was, what about that was tribal combat? So sadly, it was just a grudge match, and I enjoyed it. But it's the way Io Sky ended that last match, and you have a positive coming out of it by tribal combat not even being a factor or even a thing. It just that's the taste in your mouth that you have. So I'm curious what you think. You haven't watched a lot of this feud, a lot of this storyline, the bloodline, but so what were your takeaways from the match?
Well, talking about like Seth frickin' Rollins' entrance, watching Roman Reigns enter and just his command, like he just has everybody focused on him and just eating out of the palm of his hand. That impressed me a lot.
It's staggering, isn't it? It's staggering.
It takes a lot of chutzpah and presence to be able to pull that off. Like,
you have to remember, he was the guy that got booed out of WWE, that people hated him so much, not from heel heat. They just didn't like him. They thought he was terrible and wanted him gone, to this guy. That's incredible.
To the guy that just comes in with this, you know, stoic face and looks around, and what does he say? Acknowledge me, SummerSlam. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, it gives you chills, right? So,
right. Like, and I really like the dynamic as far as the complete opposite, where he's very stone faced, very serious. I'm here to dismantle you. I am, you know, your tribal leader. And Jey Uso, you're right. He's athletic. Not that Roman Reigns is, sure, but he's athletic. He wears his emotions on his face.
Oh, yeah.
So he's the complete opposite, which I really liked. I thought that played really well. You never really got the sense that the title was in jeopardy.
No,
I never did anyways. Like, I thought, well, the title reign's not ending now, but that's fine. That's not always the point of the match.
Yeah.
Exactly that. The whole tribal aspect of it. I was like, well, this, you're right. Like, it just became like a no DQ match. Anything goes. I didn't know that there wasn't supposed to be interference because, yeah, there was a lot of interference where Jey Uso was fighting somebody completely different for a couple minutes in the match.
Because that's Solo Sikoa. That's his brother,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And his other brother.
Yeah.
And everyone's supposed to be barred from ringside. That was the main stipulation of tribal combat, was that no one can interfere until the match is over. So, no, I just don't know what happened there. So,
and the plot twist, if we can do spoiler alert, if you're listening to this,
we can definitely do spoilers.
I didn't mind the plot twist so much, and you can speak more to that, whether it works in story or not, but I was like, how it was executed, I was like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, you've got the brother who Jey Uso was essentially fighting for, ends up betraying him, but he comes running out to the ring in a mask, and then just rips the mask off. I'm like, well, why did you even bother wearing a mask? Like, you could have run out to the ring and people would have assumed that you were there to help Jey, and then you betray him. What's the
point? It's all about,
understand the point of the mask.
Well, it was manipulating the fans, right? The mask was just for us. So the mask was so that we would be like, wait a minute, who's this? Because but they already wrecked it by allowing Solo to interfere. Meant that any interference, I think if they had not allowed any interference and then someone in a mask had shown up, it would have been like, oh my God, who's this? What is going on? Exactly. Is that Solo? What's happening? So I think they already dropped the ball with that before the mask. That's why they had the mask. It was just for us so that we didn't know what was going on. As far as narrative, did it work? No, not like, sure, not really. It wasn't very satisfying for us because, like, I think I know what they were trying to say, because Jimmy wants them out of the bloodline. He thinks that they're better on their own. And here's Jey fighting for leadership of the bloodline. So I think that's what that's supposed to say, is that Jimmy's like, it was kind of like, what the fuck are you doing? There should have been a what the fuck are you doing moment before he kicked him. I thought they should have had a face-to-face going, what are you doing? We don't need this. We're supposed to be out of here. Let's go.
Some kind of storytelling point.
Because just having him attack him, that seemed premeditated. And then that doesn't make sense to me that it would be premeditated. It should have been, an emotional reaction is why he hit him. Because he's trying to get him to, you're not listening to me, younger brother. I'm the older brother. Bam. Like, trying to teach him a lesson kind of thing. So didn't quite work for me, but it didn't wreck it either. The story's been going for so long and it has been so effective. I can just kind of ignore that part of it and see where they're going. Cause a Jimmy versus Jey feud sounds great to me. Give me that all fucking day. That'll be spectacular. If they have cage matches, they'll be jumping off the top of it. It'll be unbelievable. So I don't mind the idea of the two brothers having a bit of a feud, but I just don't see how that fits in with the current bloodline thing, but they'll figure that out on their own. I'm not going to write it. So they'll make it work.
It's a little messy right now.
They clunked it at the end there. I don't think that they're completely happy with how that all went down. I just don't get the changes. They seemed unnecessary, the things that they did. I'm not sure what the thought process was, but it's too late. It happened. So now we just have to deal with it.
Well, and maybe you're right. Like, you get past this moment and then they've kind of, the story progressing forward kind of sorts itself out in a satisfying way. Then this is just a weak moment in the story, or something that could have been told a little bit better, and that maybe in the coming weeks it'll become a little more clear what this moment actually was supposed to mean. Because right now I'm just thinking he betrayed his brother for Roman, but that's me coming in cold with not a lot of background either, right? So,
and for all of us,
a guy in a mask,
that can't be it for us, because he he hates Roman now. So we're like, that's why it's confusing. We're like, yeah. But he hates that guy. And if he hates that guy, then maybe Jimmy's just wanting out, or I'm not sure.
Well, yeah.
I don't know. They'll.
I look forward to hearing from you where this story goes.
Well, hopefully Friday night SmackDown, we should get some answers, because Bloodline they're actually on SmackDown. So that there'll be there's always a huge segment. The last half hour is usually Bloodline stuff. So we'll get a little more information next time we record. I can update you on what the hell's going on. So
nice. I'll look forward to it.
But SummerSlam, I think overall, like, that was, you know, a 4-hour event. It was, I think that was nice and tight for me. That's how long a pay-per-view should be. It was like three hours, 50 minutes, just creeping up on 4 hours. I wasn't tired by the time it was done. Like, I was ready for bed. I'm 50. But it didn't, I don't think it outstayed its welcome. None of the matches felt too long. I think if they had one more match, it probably would have been too much. If there was another half an hour match, that would have pushed it over. But I think that was the right pacing for it. And overall, I'll give it 2 thumbs up. That was a good time. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I would say exactly that. It never overstayed its welcome. The matches that I wasn't a fan of weren't overly long. It's not like it was a 1-hour match that I was like, oh my God, this is still going.
Right.
So even kind of the low points for me, they didn't last long, so it didn't really affect my overall enjoyment of it. I was glad I watched it, because like I said at the beginning, just the pomp and circumstance and the presentation is just second to none. Like, it's incredible, just the overall look and feel of this. So yeah, I was really happy I finally got to watch one for the first time in many, many, many years. So
beautiful. We love wrestling, don't we? Yeah, we love wrestling.
We do.
How about those replays? I told you about it. They slip those replays in so fast. You see this crazy move. Oh, boom. There it is on the split screen. And it's just, it flows, and you're still watching the meme. Oh, I love that move. And you watch the replay. It's one after the other. And I found it's never too much. I want to see that move again. How did that work? Here it is. We'll show it to you. It's like, fuck.
Yeah.
I love that presentation. I love it.
I love the addition of replays exactly. You see it on AEW and you see it here. And it adds that element of enjoyment to it that I'm here for that all day.
Okay, well, it's time to wrap things up. Huge thanks to all the listeners that joined us this week. Don't forget to subscribe and download the episode in your podcast app of choice. Every little bit helps us. Spotify users, you can now interact directly with the podcast in-app, as we add Q&As and polls for every episode, so check those out. And we even try and read out your responses, so let us have them. And you can now reach the podcast on Instagram at Murder Gymnastics Pod. I try and post daily, so pop on over for fun memes, pics, and videos. And of course, Paul, if people got nothing going on, what should they do?
Go watch some wrestling! Yeah!